Some sense of danger told him that he had to act right now. And he wasn't alone in that. Christy was already ahead of him. She couldn't see as well, but she sensed that the situation was changing rapidly. Her sentient hair wrapped itself around her skull and her neck, clinging to her in the manner that it only did in times of triple red danger. Jack, Mildred, and JB couldn't see what was happening ahead of them, but they were clued into the fact that something was going down by one look at Christy. By the time that Doc had pitched forward, devoid of consciousness and with blood pouring from the wound on his head and down over his shoulders and hair, matting the white mane, the companions were all fighting their way through the crowd. JB kept one eye to his rear, trying to judge their chances of escape and to gauge what kind of route they could take. Things were going from bad to worse. Inside the skins and furs, he was sweating, the air hot with the fires that raged around. Soon the whole ville would be nothing more than an inferno, and they'd be trapped in the center of the blaze.
Dark night. We'd be lucky to get out of this one.
But first they had to try to get to Doc. The sudden confusion had made this section of the Inuit invasion party seemingly forget all about the inhabitants of Fairbanks. They were jostling one another in confusion, trying to find out what was going on. For them, it was perhaps as well that the few survivors of the relentless onslaught had now drawn back toward the center of the ville, as they would have presented an easy target. They were so distracted by their sudden halt that it was relatively easy for the companions to individually push their way through to the front of the crowd. They were not the enemy, even though they may have incurred some suspicion, so they were allowed to pass almost unnoticed. Thompson was leaning over Doc. The old man was still and silent on the sidewalk. Ryan reached them first.
What the hell?
Him!
Thompson pointed to McPhee, now being held by two Inuit warriors.
He hit the messenger.
Why?
Think I know that. We've nearly achieved our goal, and then this.
Nearly achieved what? Killing the whole fucking tribe? In case you haven't noticed, this place is like a funeral pyre. And for more than just the people we came to sacrifice. If this is like a big wicker man, then we're trapped in the belly of the beast as well. And it's all due to him and whatever he purports to be.
McPhee's spittle landed on Doc's prone form. Thompson stepped forward and struck the medicine man across the face with a backhanded blow that snapped the shaman's head back.
Shut up! It was on your word that we started out here. You told me that it was the only way to appease the Lord.
Me? You asshole! I was the one who had the dotes!
As the two men began to argue, and the Inuit looked on in complete confusion, the companions took the opportunity to slip closer to Doc. Mildred knelt beside him and examined the area of the blow as rapidly as she could. She ran her fingers expertly over the blood-slick skull.
Hasn't fractured by the feel, thank God. He'll have a hell of a concussion and won't be able to move by himself, Ryan.
Fire blast him, fuck it. It would have helped if he could have saved us carrying him. This is going to make it hard. What we really need is a bigger diversion than just those two arguing.
Heads up. I think this might be it.
McIndoe appeared from out of the smoke, a couple of his most trusted sec-men in tow. He took a long look at what was going on. The prone stranger surrounded by his friends, the chief and the medicine man arguing.
What the fuck is going on here? All parties have driven the survivors back to the center. They're all holed up on one street, a line of buildings. We got them all pinned there. They can't get at us, and they can't get out without being chilled. It's perfect for what we want. If we don't blast them, the fires will get them. We just need the ritual! When you didn't arrive with the rest of the parties, we didn't know what to expect!
I'll tell you what's going on. We've run into a trap. A trap of our own making. Our own stupid idea. And we're caught like a deer in a pit. The fires will get more than the people of Fairbanks.
But this is to save the tribe. To offer these people to the Almighty so that he can make us fertile again.
We're finished. All of us. We listened to a lunatic. And now we've got to face the fact that we are history. This isn't the rebirth of the tribe. It's our funeral pyre.
Dark night. I wish he hadn't mentioned Doc.
McIndoe and those others who heard McPhee turned to where Doc had now been lifted up, supported by Christy and Mildred. He was barely conscious, his eyes rolling in his head, and only the faintest incoherent mumblings escaping his lips. Jack, JB, and Ryan flanked the women. They had hoped to at least start moving from the front of the crowd, while attention was focused on the arguing sec leader, the medicine man, and the chief. But McPhee's words had put an end to those chances. If they could have just moved another 20 yards, they could have tried to escape down a side street. As it was, they were backed up against a building that was uncomfortably hot from the fires that were reaching it, with no escape route.
I knew you were trouble.
McIndoe raised his Sharps rifle.
Wait! What good would killing them do?
None. But if I'm dying, they're coming with me.
A wave of fear and anger swept through the Inuit at these words, as though it were no longer conjecture, but cold hard fact that they were dead meat. And Ryan could see that the companions were helpless. There was nowhere to run. They needed a miracle. And what they got came pretty close.
Oh, shit! It's all coming down!
Everett, what the hell? Oh, shit!
Desperation had fueled one last act of defiance from the Fairbanks inhabitants who were trapped in the center of the Burningville. They had fired up the buildings in which they were now cowering, using all the fuel they could find, all the ammo and weaponry they possessed. It meant their own demise, but they knew that they were dead anyway. It was only a matter of whether it was a quick death, or one that was slow and painful. The choice was obvious. They had turned the street in which they were holed up like rats into a giant bomb. Once detonated, it had set off a chain reaction among those buildings burning nearby. The rubble strewn from the blast, hammering into buildings made unstable by their own blazes, rendering them to the ground in their turn. Like a string of dominoes, once one building tumbled into another, it set those around it into a state of collapse. The thick smoke was now overpowered by dust. Clouds of choking darkness began to engulf the Inuit and the companions as the buildings shattered to rubble all around them, and Fairbanks was razed to the ground. The last they saw of Macondo, or Thompson and McPhee, was the sect chief's surprised expression as his gaze was taken from his leveled rifle to the rubble that flew around him.
Shit! Let's get the fuck out of here!
Now was all they could do to outrun the chain reaction. JB and Jack were off like rabbits escaping a snare, making for the streets 20 yards to their left before the domino effect claimed it. Ryan helped Christy and Mildred carry Doc, allowing Jack and JB to run ahead, scouting the route. The armorer had acquired the mental layout of the bell as they had passed it, and Jack was able to move more swiftly, telling him where once open streets had already been claimed by fire and collapse. With a roar of destruction ringing in their ears and the dust and heat making it hard to breathe, the three carrying Doc didn't know how they made it to the edge of the bill. There was no time to think, just to do. They kept running, somehow keeping their balance when stumbling, somehow breathing when the air seemed too thick with dust and smoke to be inhaled. It was blind instinct for survival that drove them. There were times when they couldn't truthfully say that they had seen Jack and JB guide them, only that they somehow knew where they were supposed to run. Past the gates they had entered by, over the wreckage of the crow's nests, hitting the steep incline of the valley wall, now safe from the flying rubble, but still trapped in the spumes of choking dust and smoke. They had to get up the side of the valley, to where the air was cleaner. It was a blind struggle, one that seemed to take forever, and no time at all. Time had lost all meaning. Ryan had been flat on his back, gulping in clean air and hacking up smoke-polluted phlegm for some minutes before he realized where he was. He looked around. The others were with him, all in a similar state of collapse. All except for Doc, who was still unconscious, but now had the sweetest, most innocent smile on his face. Ryan unsteadily raised himself to his feet. They had ended up several yards from the lip of the valley, and they were fortunate that the winds were taking the smoke and dust away from them. The one-eyed man staggered the couple of paces to the edge of the valley so that he could see the devastation below. It was hard to make out through the smoke, but it seemed as though the whole ville had been flattened by the chain reaction. It was doubtful anyone else could have made it out alive. If they had, he couldn't tell. He turned back to the others. They were in no fit state to move as yet, but it was freezing up on the ridgeline, and they'd soon have to seek shelter. The early afternoon sun was already beginning to sink. Shelter, food, and a place to go from here. Those were needs that would have to be attended to, and soon. But now, it was all he could do to stop from sinking to his knees and letting oblivion claim him. Deathland's Ritual Chill is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Timberly Chanel, Michael Replogle, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Christian Parent, Nathaniel Perry, and Brian Patton. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Script adapted for graphic audio by Bill Campbell. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for exciting previews after these announcements. The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
The Executioner number 307, Hard Pursuit. We got him. Amour ibn Laoud, wealthy terrorist mastermind, is in the custody of the FBI. He sits, bound hand and foot, in the hold of an airborne C-130 for the moment.
We have an enemy aircraft shadowing us. This aircraft is under threat of a shootdown. Get your people prepared now.
Hydraulics are going dead!
I'm bringing her in! Brace for impact!
Get them! Get them all! I want them all executed!
Now Laoud has escaped with American hostages. Mac Bolan, along with FBI agent Orlando Wasdy and U.S. Marshal David Kowalski, pursue them from the broiling desert sands.
You think the three of us can take on a squad of Islamic ninja terrorists on motorcycles? It's pretty long odds.
You get used to it.
To a tanker in the middle of the ocean.
Stryker, what's your sit rep?
I'm in the hold with the fuel tanks right now. I need you to get those men out of here ASAP.
You mean you're going to set those charges? The minimum safe distance is...
unreachable. They've been swimming for it.
Holy shit.
Ready to finish this day off with a bang?
Executioner number 307, Hard Pursuit, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting November 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Outlanders number 29, Sun Lord.
Grant, where's Kane?
Kane has been snatched away from his friends in the middle of a jump. Now, suffering from amnesia, he finds himself in a strange land with stranger powers.
Concentrate. You have powers beyond your wildest imagination.
Okay, but I don't see what good it... Whoa! Did I do that?
Of course. You are the Sun Lord. Welcome back, Tonatio. Welcome back to the front lines.
Dearest Bridget... I'm afraid we must come to terms with our loss.
We have to find him. He's still alive. I know it.
Bridget Baptiste has been having dreams. Dreams that may reunite Kane with his friends.
Baptiste!
Kane!
Where am I? I'm here.
Kane!
I'm here. Where is here?
Kane! I know where he is.
But getting to him may require sacrificing more than they can bear. Their very souls.
Well... I am very pleased that you are all here. Now, please make yourselves at home, for you will die if you leave.
Outlanders 29, Sun Lord.
Outlanders number 29, Sun Lord, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting November 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Breaking news. We have just received a video purported to be from the group responsible for the massive explosion in America's heartland today.
Our strike against the United States had a number of objectives. To pay back the United States for the unprovoked and cowardly attack on Iraq by letting the American people see how it is to suffer. We also wanted to show that Americans are not safe at home any longer. We have the means and the will to strike within your borders when and where we like. The American government is powerless to stop us. There will be more attacks. We have our people in place and we have the weapons. Prepare yourselves. America's days are numbered.
Saddam Hussein's regime has not disbanded. They have been reunited by a man the world thought dead. They are gathering the money and the weapons to make good their threats. And the only things standing in their way are the men and women of Stony Man Farm, the president's covert intelligence agency.
Move it! Move it!
It's time we started to hit back using their methods. It's time we stopped playing by the rule book our enemies discarded a long time ago.
You will tell us what we need to know, Mr. Schwartz. Who has betrayed us?
We have God on our side. That is why we will destroy you, because we are chosen.
Stony Man number 76, Gathering Storm. Be there. Your life depends on it.
Stony Man number 76, Gathering Storm, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting November 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Don't waste time searching the stores for the next installment of your favorite series or stories you've missed. Call 1-800-670-5220 and order direct in CD, cassette, or MP3 CD formats. Or plug into Graphic Audio's website, where you can order it in those formats, or for accelerated gratification, download it right now for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com and 1-800-670-5220.